gerrymandered. Folks who believed in the Constitution were lied to, burned out, bought and sold, because they agreed all men and women were created equal. Folks vote to make us free. It's not cookies nor cake, but it is the icing that is so sweet. Good for the folks, good for us. My country, 'tis of thee.
Acclaimed poet and activist and professor Nikki Giovanni reading her poem Vote, which is in her new collection, Make Me Rain. Special thanks to The Meteor, a feminist collective of activists. And a reminder, Democracy Now! Will air a 3-hour election night special tonight from 9 p.m. to midnight. I'll be co-hosting with Juan Gonzalez and Nermeen Sheikh. You can watch it live at our website, democracynow.org. We'll be covering the results from the presidential election to congressional and state races, as well as ballot initiatives across the country. Democracy Now!'s election night special will feature interviews and perspectives that you won't hear anywhere else, including the voices of activists, analysts, grassroots leaders, discussing how the movements on the ground will go forward following this historic election, starting at 9 p.m. through midnight Eastern Time. And you can check your local station. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Special thanks to Julie Crosby.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KABU, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee meets on the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. Please visit our website at kabu.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. It's Tuesday. It's 8 a.m. It's time for Too Much Information with your hosts, Abe Proctor and Tracy Simmons, coming right up. Meanwhile, well, later, KABU will be broadcasting Democracy Now!'s election night coverage special from 6 p.m. Pacific, followed by a roundtable of KABU and other local thinkers, program hosts, etc. Now, on with the show.
Good morning. We are here at last.
Is this the finish line?
Is this the finish line?
Yeah.
It is, interestingly, but it's a finishing line that's probably many days long. More like a big finishing area, a finishing demilitarized zone, if you will. Hi, Dave Crocker. I'm talking with Tracy Simmons. This is Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. On your radio dial, and it is at long last election day. How are you feeling, Tracy?
You know, I am feeling all the feels, you know, anxious, excited, optimistic, feeling a little bit of that existential dread, feeling some of the post-traumatic stress that I felt, you know, after 2016. It's all there. And I just feel like it's a ball of emotion. But I'm really trying to lean in as much as possible to the optimism so I can get through the day and potentially the week. And I'm really trying to spread that to other people that I know who are in the same state of just feeling every single emotion that is possible and known to humans, because I think that's what's going to help us move through today and whatever ensuing, you know, kind of disputes about, you know, votes and all of that is going to come. I think we're going to need to lean into our highest vibrations of emotions.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. It is kind of weird heading into something where, you know, we've sort of built it up in our minds that, you know, ideally we would have some sort of resolution, but in reality, we may be heading into a period of, you know, an indeterminate period where we don't really know what the outcome is going to be. And I think one quick look at history shows you that periods like that usually go quite peacefully, and there's usually not much discord at all during interregnums, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, I did go get lunch downtown yesterday. My one of my best friends and her husband own a shop, and it was like crazy just to see all of the boarded up buildings, and their shop was boarded up. Mm-hmm. And I'm just really hoping that Oregonians and Portlanders don't fall into what has been prescribed for us, that we are on a list of yep. places where post-election violence and rioting is supposed to happen. I really want folks to drop off their ballots, go home, hang with their families, pet their pets, whatever they're going to do, but just really just lean into the space of, we need to heal this country. We've got to heal. And more violence is not the answer. And so I'm just really trying to implore our listeners and anyone I can that the healing really has to begin sooner than later. We can't continue on this path that we're on. And, you know, just it's really the time. And so, you know, what is your individual responsibility? What's the responsibility of you as a leader in your community? Whether you see yourself as a leader or not, you are. And so I'm just really trying to kind of lean into that space of what's next. What do we want our future to look like, and how are we going to create that ourselves?
You know, you're right. Beyond the top level need that we all perceive, you know, this desperate need for radically different policy positions, for incredibly ambitious initiatives to drag our society through this next period of uncertainty. We see all that, but below that is this secondary level of interpersonal damage. And I've had relationships in my family suffer because of the political divide in this country, and that has only intensified over the past few months. I think there's a lot of that out there. I think there are a lot of individual relationships that are going to need some attention and some love when this is over. Not only for the sake of those relationships themselves, but because we need to do this in the realization that come what may, we're all in this together going forward. And to the extent to which we can reconcile these differences and actually get to work together, that will be, you know, that will redound to everyone's benefit. I have my doubts as to whether or not that will be able to happen to the extent that we need it. But I remain hopeful, I think, much like you do. Mm. So I'm hoping today that, yeah, I'm hoping today that our listeners will call and join this conversation. I would like to hear how people are feeling. I've been carrying this around in my body. This tension has been a constant companion for so long, I can't even recall a period where I didn't wake up in the morning and feel this weight. I've been carrying this around with me, and I imagine I'm not the only one. I didn't sleep a whole lot last night. How'd you do last night? Tracy, did you sleep much?
I haven't slept in weeks. I think I went to sleep at 11 and woke back up at like 2:30, and me and the cat were like doom scrolling on Twitter, and then I was like, well, let's switch over to cats of Twitter and look at the cats. And so, you know, I haven't been sleeping. I am notorious, and I've had issues with sleep for a long time because I hold a lot of fear and anxiety in my stomach and also in my head. And so sleeping has always been elusive, but it's been even more elusive in these last even few months. So I'm hoping that I can sleep like a baby at some point into the future. But yeah, no, sleep has not been a thing. And I think for many marginalized communities and people with marginalized identity, it's been pronounced in the recent months that folks are not sleeping collectively, and that has an impact on our society in different ways. It has an impact on productivity. It has an impact on the ability to be impatient, or the ability to be patient, the ability to really connect with others. Because if you're walking around exhausted all the time, that it absolutely plays into how you show up in the world. And so I'm really trying to figure out when I can get a nap today, because I have a total of maybe 3 or 4 hours of sleep and I've got lots of meetings and things after this. So I think a lot of people aren't sleeping, and I think it's time to figure out what we're going to do about that, to rest our mental capacity in some way. I think that the Trump kind of flood the zone with just nonsense all the time also has been a challenge. And so I think for many of us who are hoping that he makes a grand exit out of the presidency, that he will take with him that flood the zone with, just garbage. And so we can maybe rest a little bit easier, not work, worrying up at night and waking up in the morning to watch CNN and figure out what he did terrible in the last 3 hours while we were sleeping, who he hate tweeted. I just feel like there's some of that many of us, I would say, who are part of the queer community, who are part of the communities of color, Black community, are really wanting to just have a break from some of that. And I know I'm feeling a sense from the media that they actually want Trump around because it gives them some reason to pay attention, right? Mm-hmm. They're selling newspapers. They're selling behind the paywall articles because Trump's always doing something. And I think they anticipate that Joe Biden will be subdued and measured and not chaotic and will cost them money. I think we need to lean into boring for a little while. We've had almost 4 years of just nonstop crazy. Which is not good for one's psyche. It becomes, at one point it's kind of acute stress, and it becomes chronic stress. And just imagine a whole nation that is really suffering under chronic stress. I think that's where we are, and that's why we also need to figure out, how to reconnect with QAnon auntie, how to try and bridge some gaps with, our racist uncle, whoever it is that we have really severed ties with. We have to realize those social bonds that we exist in are what keeps us together. It's part of a movement around getting to our future. And so I just will say there's got to be some point where we allow for that chronic stress to fall away and move through the space. I've been meditating. I don't know if that's helping. I wonder, are our listeners sleeping well? What are they doing to try and get some sleep too?
I'm wondering about that as well. And I agree with everything you said. And one thing I'm really grateful for is that knowing Donald Trump as we do, I'm positive we can count on him to make a dignified and graceful exit. I couldn't even finish that sentence. All right, 503-231-8187 is the number to call to take part in this conversation. You can also tweet us at TMIPDX2. We want to hear how you're handling this situation. How you dealt with the stress leading up to this day? Did you sleep last night? But more importantly, I want to know if this election goes the way you want it to go, whatever direction that might be. What are your dearest hopes for the immediate future? What do you hope will come to pass to address the many, many pressing emergencies that surround us on all sides? Do you think that's even reasonable? What's maybe the best case scenario if we don't get everything that's on your wish list? I want to know how you see the next 4 years going if everything goes according to your desires. So 503-231-8187. Here's, Tracy, how I'm hoping the next 24 hours or so will go. There's a chance that Joe Biden might win this election so overwhelmingly that the attempts by the Republican Party to nibble away at the margins with vote suppression tactics, with court challenges, with Trump's bluster, with physical intimidation at the polling place, all of that becomes much less important if that margin of victory is wide enough. So really, the shortest route to that, to letting that feeling of tension dissolve away, is a is an overwhelming blowout victory from Joe Biden today. There's a chance of that. It's not real great. It's tonight you go to bed and Florida is in the Biden column, North Carolina is in the Biden column. I think you could pretty much call it an election. And we may know about those states because they are among the so-called early count states where they have begun opening and processing mail-in ballots already. Those are simply ready to be added to the tally as the day goes on today. So this may take shape by the end of the day. Far, probably more likely, it won't take shape by the end of the day. And we're looking at an extended period of the unknown. And that's really where some of my my darker fears reside, is that period of the unknown.
Yeah, absolutely.
How are you hoping this day plays out?
I hope, similar to you, that, you know, we do know. What I am encouraging folks to do is to create a plan for how they're going to spend their day, that they maybe create a plan for when they're going to check in on progress and not just watch for 5-6 hours straight. And this is just from my own experience in 2016, staying up past 11 p.m. On the West Coast and having a cry fest and then having to go to work the next day was not fun. and so, I'm really trying to encourage other people to, like, create a plan. What are you going to do? Are you going to be alone? Are you going to be with, you know, family members, pets, partners, friends, whatever you're going to do? It is still a pandemic, so you want to make sure that you're masked up and being safe. But I would say if you are feeling the same kind of emotional, upheaval within yourself, that you make a plan for how you're going to get through today. So I've already made that plan. I am, not trying to look at polls or do any of that. I am spending time with my family. We're going to cook some delicious food. We're going to listen to music. We're going to play some games. And then we're going to tune in and tune back out and tune in and tune back out as it makes sense for us. But we're not going to be flipping through the channels just kind of gnawing our fingernails all night, because it's not helpful either. And so, I've been, telling other folks, that I have relationships with, make a plan for what you're going to do, on election day. Make sure that you get your ballot in if you're in Oregon, and that you drop off your ballot before 8 p.m. Make sure that, you're calling people outside of Oregon and imploring them to get their votes cast. However that is in the states and places they're at. And then you make a plan for not only tonight, but tomorrow. I have carved out some time in my day for just mental clarity and being in my own space. And so I'm not going to predict how I want things to go. I'm already planning for all eventualities, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, I've made a plan too. I've carved out part of the afternoon to go on a bike ride with my son. Just to get the blood flowing and clear the head a little bit. And I have plans to rationally take in the returns this evening, but I have a feeling that when all is said and done, I will be sitting there with white-knuckled grip on the neck of a bottle of wine. That's the late part of the evening may go tonight. We'll see. Because, we're joking right now. And we're making, I think, positive suggestions about self-care. But the reality here today is, we might see some stuff today, people. We might see some really, really ugly things transpire today. We might see armed citizens intimidating other citizens at the polling place, and that's just the beginning. Since we've really never gone through anything like this in conditions anything like this today. So what I want to implore everybody to do, in addition to taking care of yourselves, not letting it weigh too heavily on you, is please, by all means, and you echoed this earlier, or I'm echoing what you said earlier, Tracy, no violence. I know that the conditions are ripe for it, the temptation is there, the precedent has been set in recent months, but please, don't go out there and beat on your fellow Americans. This is not the time. This is not set the sort of omen we want going forward. It's better if we just all take a deep breath and don't give in to those darker impulses, because they will be tempting us today. So let's go to the phones. Squirrel, good morning. You're next. You're first. Happy election day.
Buenos dias. I think it's ejection day today. I'm very optimistic that Trump's going to get his packing orders and he's going to go away. I have lost a few friendships over this, which is kind of not good, but that's the way it goes sometimes. On that note, I'm just very optimistic there's going to be a nice big blue wave. I did get a text the other day. Some friends of mine sent me this George Carlin clip on why he doesn't vote, which I think everybody should vote. But George was so right on with most of his stuff. And it shows him repackaging this pile of caca, this box of caca, that every 4 years starts over here, then goes over here, and then goes back and forth, which is pretty much right on. But this time, it's a bigger thing. I'm optimistic that there's not going to be a lot of crazy stuff in the streets, although there could be. That's my little take. I'm optimistic things are going to change.
Well, I hope you're right, man. And I appreciate the call. And hang in there. Be well. Be safe. And we'll see you on the other side. Thanks for the call. All right, let's go to Robbie. Good morning, Robbie.
Yeah, good morning. Yeah. I don't think anything's going to fundamentally change. That's also what Joe Biden said when he gets elected. You know, nothing will fundamentally change. I think we'll still be bombing Yemen. I think the Syrian civil war over the Iranian friendship pipeline will be going on. I think American citizens will be, you know, propagandized with the media suggesting that, you know, war is peace, so we got to go bomb them. But, you know, there's some stuff that as you said, you know, I really hope that the violence doesn't occur. It seems like the media is really pushing that. Apparently there's going to be some, I don't know if you heard about what's going to be happening in D.C. tonight, but it looks like that's going to be the Reichstag fire.
No, elaborate, please.
Well, there is a leaked video on Zoom of some federal workers who were, alleged to have been planning a coup. And there's a lot of affinity groups that have been pressing this idea. It's been circulating around the activist groups down there in D.C. And it seems like they're going to, I don't know, it just seems like it's going to be the start of the Reichstag fire, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah, that is unfortunate. I'm a little confused, though. Well, Zoom is an online meeting platform. How is a video leaked on Zoom?
Yeah.
Well, it was a leak. It was
there's no evidence that that's really going to happen. I have heard that, but there's no evidence that that's true. And it's pretty irresponsible saying that there is a fascist coup in process. Now, I am very concerned about the walls that have gone up around the White House. That's very concerning for sure. But I think it's more because President Trump doesn't want to see the people who are going to be protesting him. Should he claim victory before it's time to do so?
Well, I mean, I'm not saying it's, you know, factual or not. I'm just saying that it seems as though there's going to be, a push for this violence for the very, you know, reason into which, and it's not even our side probably that's wanting to provoke it. But, you know, that's beside the point. It was a leaked Zoom call that was going on. It was between a group. Somebody got a screen capture of it. It leaked around on the internet. The right wing people are freaking out about it. You know the drill. I mean, I'm not saying it's factual or not. I'm just saying that this seems to be what they're pushing now. But regardless of that, last week, you ended on a caller and you got really upset at them. And it's really funny, but I kind of want to reiterate this point because it seems like we're just in two different worlds. The caller was describing how he wasn't going to be supporting Joe Biden, and that was a part of his privilege. I think part of the privilege is suggesting that voting for Joe Biden is what we need to do when Joe Biden wrote the crime bill, when Joe Biden, you know, wanted to do the Bill of Rights for the police.
We know your position, Robbie. You've made it clear on this program many times. You know, we can couch it in terms of privilege or not. I don't know that it makes any real difference in the final analysis. What we're suggesting is that despite all the drawbacks, all the flaws, all the inconsistencies and inadequacies of the more liberal of the two major parties, we're asking you to consider just perhaps the possibility that there might not actually be an equivalence between the two, that one side might be not just worse, but catastrophically worse than the other.
I just want to say one thing. If I haven't been able to convince you of that by now,
I'm not sure what I can say.
No, I want to say something about last week that you brought up.
Okay.
You were saying, where is it? Where is this third party? Where is this organized effort? And the difference in our world views is that will never be a reality. They're going to rig the Democrats rigged an election right in front of us, and nobody cared. They did it twice, and people don't even believe it. They don't think that there's evidence of it, but there's so much evidence of it that this is the difference in the world. Like that is never going to happen. And so we're always going to be coming down to this thing where it's like, well, we got to do this. And it's like, yeah, sure, you know. But the thing is when you subscribe to this idea that we will never do that, then you'll start to realize that this is being, you know, it's a chosen race. Like Donald Trump literally endorsed Hillary Clinton to run in 2011. I'll gladly send you that tweet. But there's a quote from him that people wouldn't even believe he said. You know, Donald Trump was pro-abortion, for universal health care, and was a Democrat up until the year 2010. I just don't buy it. What I see is I see this war machine. I see it tricking people. I see it getting people's emotions going. And so at the end of the day, I don't think there is going to be fundamental change. And everybody gets Joe Biden in, and then we all, you know, oh, great, he's in office. Now it's going to be back to the same thing I've been protesting against the entire time. That's how this is, you know, I'm trying to just relay where it is that activists are coming from, not just people who've been paying attention the last 4 or 5 years.
Okay.
Well, thanks,
hey, man, thanks for the call. And I hope that you have voted, and I hope that you do if you haven't already. Thanks for the call. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. You're listening to Too Much Information on KBOO 90.7 FM. Tracy, what's your take on that call?
I want to respond to Robbie. You know, yeah. I appreciate Robbie. I think it's good to have differing perspectives and to be able to have discourse within those kind of that spectrum of difference. I also feel like, you know, this kind of purporting about the war machine and all of this, right? The way that we have set up our democracy is that if we have only, you know, Congress and, you know, say when we had a more liberal jurist, right, we only have part of the solution, right? We don't have all of the solution. And so we still have people who are part of that war machine pushing us to, you know, fire drone strikes on Syria or whatever they're doing, right? That's part of the problem. Right now we have a domestic terrorist problem. We have a problem within our own borders of over 230,000 Americans dead of a deadly, you know, preventable virus. We have all of these things that are domestic in nature. And so, you know, I know sometimes we get really focused on, you know, foreign affairs and some of the things that are happening that are absolutely not good and acceptable. I think right now we really are at an existential moment in our country, though. And, you know, I would love to have something like ranked choice voting. I would love to have something where we allow. We have to fight for that. We, as long as Donald Trump or anyone else really in the Republican Party is going to be in office and in control, we're not going to have that. And we also, you know, I think sometimes we focus on what Democrats haven't done without looking at the context historically, right? As soon as the Democrats come with something that is going to help all people, Republicans step in, they get power, they, you know, run up the score and talk about the deficit and all the ways that we can't afford things while we have billionaires in our society, and they are, you know, really sponsored by corporate billionaires, for lack of better understanding. And so then we
become part of the game as part of the Democratic Party. I don't necessarily consider myself a Democrat. I am an independent thinker. But I actually often vote with Democrats because they are the ones who bring forth policies that help people, that help every ordinary, you know, person in the country. And so this idea that, you know, Democrats haven't done anything or it's going to be the same, we have to think about the structures of our you know, legislative processes that create that, right? They really perpetuate the status quo. And until we start tweaking with that, but if we have Donald Trump in office, he is not going to change fundamentally anything. He's going to make it worse, right? That the status quo is what we are all working towards, because now we can't even do, you know, racial sensitivity training. We can't even talk about critical race theory. We can't, you know, we definitely aren't going to have health care for most people. We definitely aren't going to stop this pandemic. And so, you know, I want to push back on some of the things that Robbie said. I want to validate that that is a valid position to take, but also to say there's also fatalism in saying it's never going to change. If you want it to change, you have to do something. So, you know, I would like to ask Robbie and other activists, what are they doing around bringing forth the ranked choice voting? What are they doing around mobilizing people around some of the issues, you know, with war and, you know, supporting the industrial war complex? What are they doing? Because to just say it's never going to happen and then decide not to vote really doesn't help any of us. That's what I want to say.
And I might suggest to Robbie, you know, let's see you run for city council or county council on the Pacific Green ticket or as an independent. You know, let's see that third party building movement begin, you know?
Not in November 2024 either, like now.
Yeah, not in November 2024. Yeah, I completely agree with you, Tracy. I mean, if you want to break it down into a very stark choice, which I think a lot of people have done this time around, let's just take one of those issues that you brought up, and that is the deadly airborne viral pandemic that surrounds us right now. There is a candidate with a plan to control the outbreak of that pandemic, and there is a candidate without one whose plan seems to be let us take the road to herd immunity, which of course leads over millions of corpses. That makes, in my mind, a pretty stark choice. But yeah, you're right. Robbie's position is valid. The military-industrial complex in this nation is bloated and grotesque and bloodthirsty and has been for years and years and years, and has exacted an incredible toll in human and environmental suffering around the world for decades. This is manifestly and objectively true. However, it's not the only criteria on which voters must decide an election. I hope Robbie stays engaged with this program in the ensuing months and years, because I'm really, like you said, Tracy, I'm really interested in hearing what he as an activist is doing or would do in the new environment that would be offered by a change of president right now. Let's go to the phones. Annalise, good morning.
Good morning. First, I wanted to do this for a while. I like to compliment all the music makers, programmers on cable. Early this morning, was an excellent music program with Miss Diane Carr. Anyway, that is a compliment. And
excellent.
Dan the Man, Cascadia, Coffee House, and all the other good programmers. But not only do we have billionaires, and now I think the first or two companies, Amazon and I think Apple is the other one, or Google, that have $1 trillion capital. So the first thing that I would think of, and that would have happened if Stacey Abrams had been the choice for vice president, is progressive taxation. If all these multimillionaires and billionaires who don't pay any federal income taxes, if Bezos pays 60% of his wealth in income taxes, he will still be a multi-billionaire. And that's, I think, what I have not heard that at all in all these years, progressive taxation. And that might help. So thank you.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. An increase in progressive tax rates on the wealthy, particularly the obscenely wealthy, must absolutely be on the table going forward. It's the only way we're going to be able to do what we need to do in the systemic manner in which we need to do it to rescue not just this nation, but the community of nations from the existential threats that hem us in on all sides. It is absolutely true. The Jeff Bezoses of the world, the Bill Gateses of the world, the Zuckerbergs of the world, they all need to pony up because it is time. We're at the tail end of a 40-year experiment in low taxation, laissez-faire capitalism. And just look around. Just look around, everybody. This is where it's gotten us. If we're going to invest in the infrastructure we need to invest in, if we are going to combat this virus in a meaningful and effective way, if we are going to push back on the threat of climate change in a meaningful and effective way, and more importantly, if we're going to put a generation of young Americans to work making this a better country, we absolutely need to make a return to the levels of taxation we saw during the Great Depression and in the years following the war. That's when the highest marginal tax rates on the very rich were north of 90%. And that was under rock-ribbed Republican Dwight Eisenhower. This is absolutely what we need to do. And I certainly hope that the presence of figures in the Democratic primary like Elizabeth Warren and, more importantly, Bernie Sanders, I hope we can take that as evidence that this is a serious issue that needs to be near the top of a list of priorities for a new Biden administration. I feel pretty strongly about this issue, Tracy.
I mean, I'm right there with you. And like when it came out, you know, that Donald Trump had paid $750 in taxes, you know, I went straight to my W-2 to look and say, how much did I pay in 2019? And it was ridiculous. You know, I won't even say the number, but it was many times over $750. And, you know, quite laughable because I am, you know, a middle-income American, definitely not rich by any stretch of anyone's imagination. And to think that we are really carrying the burden of the tax base and know that we all can afford things like health care for all. We can afford things like quality schools for all, a preschool for all. We can absolutely afford them if we didn't have money that was really being hoarded by a very small number of individuals, more money than they will ever need. How do we have in a society houseless people and people with more money than they could ever spend? It just doesn't make sense. And the policies that have brought us to this place continue to be perpetuated by and bolstered by one party. I just will just say, you know, even right now, I'm getting really frustrated because some of the people that I grew up as heroes, Ice Cube and others, really have been hoodwinked in a way by the current president saying, you know, don't support Joe Biden. He's going to raise your taxes. You know, and the whole idea of people thinking it's cute to not pay taxes is offensive on the face of it. But to think that, you know, there are people of color out there who side with all of the terrible policies of Trump because they want to pay less in taxes is the most selfish expression of a human that I can think of, that you would literally sell out everyone else who is struggling right now through this pandemic. We've got, you know, catastrophic unemployment. We've got it tied to health care, unfortunately, because of the way that we do our health care, that it's through an employer. If you don't have a job, guess what? You don't possibly have health care. And so there's not even a way that we can address the pandemic if people don't have access to health care. But yet, I don't want to pay more in taxes, so I'm not going to support this candidate. And, you know, I was a big supporter of Elizabeth Warren in the primaries, and I loved the things that she was saying about, you know, billionaires. I've supported the things that Bernie Sanders has said. But guess what? Because we have so much big money in politics, the people who are going to donate to campaigns and prop up people like Donald Trump are the people with all the money who pull the strings on the policies that don't hold them accountable to paying their taxes, right? The Peter Thiels, you know, of course, Mark Zuckerberg, even, you know, Warren Buffett, I'm not quite sure where he lands on politics, but I'm sure he doesn't want to pay his fair share. He does it through philanthropy, which philanthropy is oftentimes just a laundering of money, because you get a tax write-off for giving away all this money that you have that you can't spend. You give it away, and then you get a tax write-off, so you even pay less in taxes. I mean, it's all structured in a way to prop up the very, very rich and keep us all beholden to them and their desires.
Yeah, I completely agree. You always hear the alarmist reactions to any notion about a large scale increase in marginal rates on the very wealthy. You know, and they say, "Oh, you're going to lose so many businesses overseas." You know, I think that's been an empty threat all the time. But actually, right at the moment, no, they're not taking any Americans overseas right now. So everyone will have to stay here and keep paying higher taxes till the pandemic is over. And the other thing I like to rebut tax increase alarmists with is, you know, just a recitation of what we were able to do collectively in the periods, the few years before the war and in the decades after, back when we had these really high marginal tax rates on the rich. We rebuilt our conquered enemies. We built an interstate highway system. We built a public university system that was the envy of the world. We presided over the largest growth of a middle class in human history. And we can look on and on and on and on. And then the seeds planted by those first generations of mass college-educated Americans planted the seeds for the counterculture movement, fueled the civil rights movement. All these things pay dividends down the road for decades and decades and decades. What we need in this country is a massive reinvestment in us, in our physical surroundings, in our education, in our bodily health, in our transportation system. It's time to stop giving money to a tiny, tiny handful of parasitic capitalists and start spending it on us. And if that's where you're coming from, then I think the choice in this election is a pretty clear one. Let's go back to the phones. Boris, you're next.
Good morning. I'll be brief. A friend of mine and myself are trying to put together a forum of critical thinkers who are inclined to think outside the box of mainstream American culture, and Robbie certainly fits the bill. So what I'm going to ask Robbie to do is to call in and get my phone number from Sonia. I've already left it with her, so
okay,
love to talk to him and do some brainstorming.
Hey.
Okay. Well, there you go, Robbie. Connection made for you right here on the air.
Right. All right. Thank you very much.
You bet. Bringing people together on Too Much Information. It's what we do. If we could talk a little bit more on this notion of taxation, if we could, because I think it's so important. It's so important to our immediate and long-term future here in the United States. Joe Biden, one of the knocks against Joe Biden as a Democratic nominee is that he's cut from the same corporate-friendly, centrist mold that, you know, too many Democrats have been for the last 40 years. And I think by and large, that is true. But if you're inclined towards optimism, as I am, you'll notice that he has indicated a willingness to consider a switch back towards the sort of progressive taxation we had in the decades after the war. Now, granted, the numbers that are being tossed around are nothing like those numbers I just described, but they're there. And the second thing that gives me some optimism is that his running mate, Senator Harris, is one of the Senate sponsors of the Green New Deal legislation. And that entire concept, that incredible sweeping project, is all predicated on implementation of progressive taxation once again in the United States. So all of this suggests to me, and I can hear many of you out there, decrying my naivete right now, this suggests to me that this is a possibility, and more than just a slight possibility. But like Roosevelt and his New Deal, it's going to take pressure from individuals and groups in the citizenry to make the president do the right thing. Roosevelt famously said to the labor activists who wanted sweeping reforms to the way labor was both regulated and compensated, he said to them, "That's great, now go out there and make me do it." So if Joe Biden wins the White House, we need to go out there and make him do it. And I think that this might be the beginning of an answer to your question, Tracy, about what are activists like Robbie going to do with the next 4 years. There's an opportunity here, I think, for progressives if we're able to seize it.
Absolutely. And voting is just the front door, right? You don't just vote and walk away and say, oh, they're going to solve it for me. No, you keep showing up, you keep putting pressure, you keep demanding, you keep voting for other people who are going to support your views in off cycles and in midterms, and you stay engaged. And I think the idea that, you know, we've had for a long time that your one civic duty was just to vote and walk away really is, it has not been borne out in any real progressive movements. And so I think for folks like Robbie and like myself and others who are really trying to push and aren't really that interested in loving the incremental slow slog of change that hasn't come, we have to do the work all the time and not get complacent in the off season, right? And that's what I'm saying. You know, don't come to me in November of 2024 and say, where's the third party candidate? Like, no, start doing the work now. Build that grassroots momentum, organize, plan, plot, strategize, whatever you need to do to really build the momentum now with, you know, a lot of people who support that and do the work at that grassroots level to say, hey, we are not going to vote for you because guess what? We are numerous and we're demanding these things. And so I think it's really important that when we start talking about the status quo and how things aren't currently working, that we not just say it's not working, it's never going to work, but we start developing a strategy for how to make what we want to see the future become true.
Indeed. Look no further than Portland. What happened here after a summer of activism? What happened? We have an actual piece of police accountability legislation on the ballot today, because of what Portlanders did all summer long. So we have to go out. We have to meet this moment, regardless of who prevails in the election today. The work is only beginning. The work only continues. Annalise, back with a P.S. to her first set of comments. Annalise, welcome back.
Oh, thank you. I have one more comment on removing the cap on the Social Security contributions.
Yes.
Because I think I don't remember anymore how much it is right now, but it's very low for the very, very rich. So that we have to remove the cap on Social Security contributions, and all the billions that will be then recorded in federal income taxes will solve most of our problems, like you just have talked about. And I also think that
right.
Trump will go down in a whimper. So
I hope you're right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Annalise, for the call. Appreciate it. You know, she's right.
For the record, it's currently $137,700. So if you make over that, your income and your contribution is capped at that number. And just imagine, I mean, if you're making over that, then you can afford to pay a little bit more, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I'm not going to, you know, check people's pocketbooks. But it seems that, you know, these are not super wealthy, but very well middle class people.
Mm-hmm.
Who I think should pay a little bit more. I don't think that they should carry all of the burden, though. But when we think about people who are making $400, $500, you know, millions of dollars a year, that the fact that there's a cap, and that cap is at $137,000 to $700,000, you know, it just doesn't make sense because they're just really pocketing that extra money where it could be going to the common good. And, you know, the thing when we say things about the common good, the first thing that's invoked is that it's, we want to make America a communist or we're socialist or all these things. And right now what we know is the extreme form of capitalism that we're under is not working. And that we've always had ways in which we were doing things for the common good, right? We've accepted them, and one party has consistently been fighting against those things.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. It blows my mind, actually, when I hear people railing against the notion that we ought to act for the collective good, as if that's somehow out of bounds, as if the collective good is something that should just take care of itself because if everybody just, you know, hunkered down and worked really hard and didn't take vacation and, you know, everything would be fine. Well, I think we have amassed enough evidence to show that that's simply not true. And we can look around us at other civilizations in the world today, and we can see what a better quality of life those citizens have because their societies are willing to invest in the collective welfare. It's long past time we did the same in this country. And I think we're moving towards a critical mass in the electorate, particularly among young people, that make that more possible today than perhaps it ever has been. So I think there's a lot of reasons to be hopeful at this moment in time. Let's go to the phones. Roger, good morning.
Oh, hi. Too much information. Having Tracy on the program is a great, excellent addition. I think her analysis.
Thank you. I agree.
Wonderful. And so that's good. And the callers are wonderful too. So, I don't know about myself, but the others. Taxes. Joseph Stiglitz put an article in the New York Times on Halloween about the tax bill and how it was sort of rigged to make people think that it was a tax cut for everyone, but it's there's going to be stepped tax increases every 2 years beginning next year. That would affect nearly everyone except for people at the top. All middle class people will be paying more taxes under the Trump tax giveaway for the rich and corporations. And under Biden's proposals, they wouldn't be raising taxes on anyone who earns less than $400,000 a year. So people would be definitely better off with Biden's tax plans than with the existing tax scam that was imposed by the Republicans a few years ago. And the Social Security, I think a lot of the very wealthy people, their income is mostly from stocks, stock options and bonuses and stuff, which don't get taxed for Social Security. And Trump talked about when he put a freeze on Social Security taxes a while ago, he said he would make it permanent if he got reelected. So they would like to kill Social Security, and I think the Democrats would like to maintain it, which is a good thing. The thing that concerns me most right now is they don't talk about it. We hear all about voter suppression and all this, you know, fake stuff about how mail-in voting is not safe, but they don't talk much about the electronic voting machines and who owns them and who controls the proprietary software. And I've, you know, looked to see if there's much talk about it. There was quite a bit of talk about the unreliability of the new machines that were being put in since the problems in previous years. And then they have these machines that they use, poll books, which is what you use to register when you come in to vote. Instead of looking on a sheet of paper to see if you're registered to vote, there's an electronic device that's made by the same people who make the machines, and these often fail, or they have misinformation, like they say, oh, you've already voted because you voted in the last election, and they forgot to take that off the machine. So they're very prone not only to failure, but I think they might be prone to not hacking by Russians or foreigners, but hacking by the people who actually own the proprietary software. And we don't
hear domestic chicanery. Yeah,
we hear nothing about that, and I'm a little nervous that there could be some shenanigans that we may not be able to detect because it's done secretly. So, the other thing, The Guardian recently had an article where they talked about how the Democratic Party has basically stayed the same, but the Republican Party has become increasingly authoritarian, starting to resemble like Hungary or the Philippines or Turkey or Poland, and that's quite disturbing. So I will listen to you on the air.
Hey, thank you for the call.
Thank you for your wonderful show.
I confess I'm not up to speed on the latest news regarding electronic voting machines. I recall it being a big problem back under the George W. Bush regime, when the Diebold Corporation was exposed in some shenanigans with their voting machines. But I can't say I'm in a position to speak intelligently about it now. But in any event, let's go to Corey here to round out the show. Corey, happy Election Day. What's on your mind?
Hey, happy Election Day, guys. And yeah, I want to reiterate that I really like having Tracy. Just has an amazing point of view, and I'm glad she brought up Ice Cube. So let's do this. You know, she mentioned Ice Cube, and Lil Wayne and all these guys. First of all, Lil Wayne grew up in poverty in Louisiana, so him supporting Trump, I find it odd. But if you listen to his lyrics over the past several years, you know, he's talked about me. The point that I, you know, kind of wanted to bring up is Lil Wayne's been rich longer than he's been poor. You know, Lil Wayne's 38 years old. Mm-hmm. This is almost a 40-year-old man who wants to keep whatever wealth he has gained, but he's also been telegraphing this for years. But I do find it odd. I also think with Lil Wayne, with Kanye, with Ice Cube, I don't think it's going to move the needle. I know that black people are not, you know, we're not a monolithic group, but the vast majority of voting blocks, black men and black women, are more than likely going to vote progressive or democratic. So I don't think, you know, I've listened to the Platinum Plan, which is also sort of insulting. Like, seriously, like the Platinum Plan, like, why don't you just call it the Spinning Rims? I mean, it's really insulting. It's also one page.
The Spinning Rims Plan.
You know, the hip hop, you know, it's almost silly. Like, and the thing I do find funny, why would you wait? You know, this, you know, we've been talking about Ice Cube like the past month. You waited a month till after the election to come up with the plan. Same thing with P. Diddy and the rest of them. So I find it odd, but I also don't think it's going to move the needle. When I hear Kanye, well, I don't listen to Kanye, but, you know, I've listened to what they've been speaking of and talking about, and it also doesn't make any sense. And I hate saying that. Like, I'm not trying to talk poorly about black people, but Ice Cube was on CNN, he was on another network, and he looked foolish, you know. And that's the thing. Like, you guys are looking foolish. There are black people out there who have come up with plans, who have like been doing this work for years. Why do you wait a month before the election and come out with the Platinum Plan? It just seems to me, it's just insulting, and I find it silly. And I'm glad, Tracy, you were there to add a little hip hop to aid. So I appreciate it.
Thank you, Corey. You know, I was just upset. I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm not the one to cancel somebody, and you know, I'm still, you know, holding out hope that these people come back around. But you're right. You know, I don't even know if Lil Wayne can even vote, because he's got multiple felonies in multiple states. But let me not go there. From the standpoint of you know, Ice Cube and this contract with Black America, he was actually reached out to and told, you know, we want you to be on this call with Kamala Harris and talk about your plan. And there were other prominent black entertainers who are also in the political sphere as activists on that call. And he said no, he didn't want to be on that call because it wasn't serious. He wanted all of the attention on himself and what he had created. And, you know, it's just this kind of course, you know, celebrity breeds the selfishness that we're seeing. But it's quite disturbing. And, you know, I don't think it's going to, you know, push, you know, black people to vote one way or another. I think people are pretty much locked into what they're doing. But it does say something for the culture that, you know, I think Malcolm X said it many years ago, that in no other demographic do we look to the entertainers to be our political leaders. And of course, the you know, the entertainers have a benefit that they're getting from their position in society. I think about even Lil Wayne as a young person, and his mother was on welfare. So you're siding with a political party that has done everything to diminish welfare, food stamps, all the things that kept you alive and got you to where you are today. And you are really to try and create a sense of your own superiority and keeping the money that you have, just, you know, forgetting about the people who will come behind you. It's pretty sad. But also, I agree that it's not going to have a huge impact on anybody. I think Trump and his cronies are saying that they're expecting to get 20% of the black male vote. Yeah, we'll see.
yeah, we'll see. Well, we're drawing very near to the end of the show here. So I just want to say to all of our listeners, all of our callers, I think the dialogue we've had over the past few weeks has been outstanding. It's been fascinating and provocative, and it's been an honor to participate in it. I just want to impress on everyone today. I can't recall a time in my life anything like this. I can't recall so many different overlapping sources of stress. I can't remember this sense of existential dread hanging over everything we do every day, all day. And it's only intensified in the days leading up to Election Day. So I just want to say to you all, vote if you haven't done it. Please, please, please vote if you haven't done it. Please be good and be kind to your fellow citizens. The last thing we want right now is violence between Americans today or in any of the days to come. And finally, there's been a lot, as we mentioned earlier in the show, a lot of damage to interpersonal relationships, to longstanding familial bonds over the political divide that's arisen in this country. So just remember this above all else. You take nothing else away from this program today. Take this. We're here to love each other. Everything else is just noise. So remember that as you go through your life today. Anything you want to say to send us out, Tracy?
I will say you said it. I mean, you said it. Thank you. Take care of yourself. Take care of others. Be in the world and create the future that you would like to see.
All right. And stay tuned for KBOO today for updates on the electoral returns. Join us this evening for full electoral coverage from Amy Goodman and the crew at Democracy Now! Keep on keeping on, Portland. We'll be back at you next week. Thanks.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Thank you, baby. I just want to take a little time out. Do you? Thank you, baby.